You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey, y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 180. Today's episode is a discussion with the creator of a new podcast and really a movement that's focused on restaurants and hospitality businesses in the southern United States, and a particular emphasis on Black-owned businesses. We're going to get into all that. But first, the last show was a comparison between French Quarter Fest and Jazz Fest. I included the pros and cons of each, and if you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in with today's topic, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. First up, support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. On April 28, 2023, HNOC will present an exhibit about women's right to vote. It's titled, Yet She is Advancing, New Orleans Women and the Right to Vote, 1878 to 1970. The 19th Amendment granted American women the right to vote, but in 1920, Louisiana laws effectively disenfranchised Black women. As many white women began going to the polls and increasing their political participation, African American women continued to fight for access to the ballot. From paying poll taxes to organizing voter registration drives, Black women challenged their status as second-class citizens up to and through the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965. This exhibit tells a decades-long story through objects, images, documents, and interactive displays, and through the words of the New Orleans women who for nearly 100 years persisted in their struggle to obtain the right to vote. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is free, and yet it somehow continues to fly under the radar, but it shouldn't be missed. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. Next up is Two Chicks Walking Tours. In March of 2023, they came back as a sponsor of Beyond Bourbon Street, and I'm so happy to have them. Longtime listeners probably remember the crew over at Two Chicks operates intentionally small public walks, and this is really important. So the city will allow a tour of up to 28 people, but Two Chicks limits it to no more than 14. They offer these tours 7 days a week, and they're focused primarily on the Garden District and the French Quarter neighborhoods. Two Chicks is also producing private curated walks for groups sized from 1 to 200. While the team is led by a female leader, Christine Miller, they do have a rooster strutting around, and there are tour guides from before the lockdown still on staff. So they have a lot of longevity. They do a lot of studying. They're constantly trying to educate themselves and update the tours. So they hope to see you on the streets soon. Find out more at twochickswalkingtours.com, and we're going to put a link to that in the show notes along with everything we talk about today. You can get a discount for being a Beyond Bourbon Street fan and member. And additionally, we're going to do a Two Chicks Walking Tour / Beyond Bourbon Street combined event. So look for information about tickets on that soon, where I'm going to go tag along. We'll get to all hang out, take a tour together, and then spend some time together. All right, with that, let's jump into today's topic. My guest today was on a previous Q&A episode several years ago, but one of the things I didn't do then is we didn't get to know him too much on that one. We just jumped into the questions and answers. And now he's launched a new podcast and a venture that I'm really excited to talk about. Welcome to the show, Mr. Rudy Rayfield Jr.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Man, I'm blessed. I'm feeling good. The weather is beautiful in New Orleans, so.
It is, man. It's good to see you.
Thank you, man.
So you have this new thing going, but first I want to really get into introducing you to our listeners, because when you were on a few years ago, I got criticized for that, rightfully so, that you jumped in with great answers to questions, but they didn't know who you were. So let's talk about that. Let's start with your backstory. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up obviously in New Orleans, Louisiana. The Sixth Ward, the Lafitte Housing Project is where I lived at with my mother. Then I moved with my father when I was about 5 years old, still in that area around the St. Philip Street, Galvis, the old Bell High School, Junior High School was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So not too far from St. Peter Claver Church.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, you're a native like me, a native New Orleanian. I have to ask you, although I know the answer, I have to ask you for those New Orleanians listening. Where'd you go to high school?
St. Augustine High School, home of the Purple Knights.
Yeah, another Catholic school. Longtime listeners know I went to Brother Martin High School. Quite a rivalry there. So, you know, let's talk about, as you became an adult, what did you get into? What kind of work did you do?
Well, you know, as a young man, I worked in Flexus in New Orleans. I was a porter washing cars. And right around that time, they had a little, I don't know if everyone remembered this, but Celebration Station was not too far.
Oh, yeah.
And I was looking to do something else. I wanted to, you know, get into supervisory role, make more money, really, what this really was about. And so when I went over there, I got hired to work in the kitchen. And so worked my way up from pizza maker, party host at that time. Celebration Station was a big fun center for kids, mm-hmm. where people had parties. You can drive go-karts, water boats, and stuff like that. But I worked my way up in the kitchen and eventually became a supervisor. And then from there, I went to the Sheraton Hotel because at that time, I wanted to study physical therapy. Hmm. And I had an opportunity to work in a fitness center in a hotel. I always wanted to stay close to learning about the body and stuff like that. And from that, Starbucks was moving into town. And in the hotel business, you know, you get promoted and things like that. So mm-hmm. I had an opportunity from a hotel manager at that time who asked if I wouldn't mind giving this a try. And so I was on that first team of opening a Starbucks. It was the first Starbucks in New Orleans, by the way.
Really?
The Canal Place Starbucks opened a week after.
Huh.
So we got that Starbucks training. It was a great opportunity, and my food and beverage career kicked off from there. I never looked back.
And now you've done quite a bit in food and beverage.
Yeah. I've been a food and beverage director a couple of places. My last stint was Cafe Reconcile, where I led at-risk youth at that time. That's what they called it. But we had both a catering operation and a training center where we train youth in hospitality. So
let's talk about Cafe Reconcile for a moment, because I haven't mentioned it that often on the show, and it ties into what we're going to get into, really.
Sure.
Yeah, so explain for the listeners a little bit about what Cafe Reconcile is and what its mission is.
Yeah, so Cafe Reconcile was basically a place where you can get a second chance. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, growing up in New Orleans, people are products of their environment. What we really don't see is sometimes people's lights get cut off. Sometimes they don't have running water. Sometimes they don't even have food. Mm-hmm. And we have to stop ignoring that these are all elements that contribute to behaviors. And so Cafe Reconcile was that place where those youth can come. They know they were going to get a meal. They know they were going to get some love.
Mm-hmm.
The mission was basically that, to give a helping hand.
You know, it's a pretty amazing place. For listeners, Cafe Reconcile is, they operate a restaurant. So it's staffed by what I think they would call at-risk youth, but youth that have come in and want a job.
Yep.
The food is terrific, by the way. Great po' boys, great gumbo, best bread pudding in the city in my mind.
Yeah.
Award-winning Bananas Foster bread pudding. But so they have youth working there. Often those graduating classes go on to get placed with big restaurants in the city. It's been really successful.
Yeah, and majority of the time, we're talking about, you know, places like Dickie Brennan's, mm-hmm. you know, Palace Cafe, Tableau, and Dickie Brennan restaurants came to mind, but Drago's, Willie Mae's, I mean, they wherever we can place them at. But what was always funny, not funny, but a lot of the restaurant managers, the owners, restaurateurs will always say, these youth are so trained. You know, they wear gloves properly. They're doing the correct serve safe requirements. They're dating. They're doing things that industry and veterans didn't do. Right. Which made us proud, because the idea for them really was they had 8 habits. Right. Accepting and following directions, working well with others. These things seem like everyone should do. But we got adults that don't want to follow directions. Let's just be honest. So. You know, to get these youth to a place where they could accept and follow directions and learn a new skill, knife skills,
yep.
fry cook station, grill station, saute,
front flat, of house, back of house.
Front of house, back of the house, and just teaching them about working well with others. And I just had an amazing time. So,
yeah. And then, so upstairs, just to carry that a little further, upstairs is sort of, they offer everything from childcare to helping kids get GEDs, yep. really whatever they need. They have grief counseling
yep.
when stuff happens in the neighborhood.
The program component really went over and beyond. I mean, we're yeah. talking about, you know, providing transportation, bus tokens, mm-hmm. helping, you know, obviously get jobs. They even had a stipend that they gave the youth for coming every day. So they were rewarded for their hard work.
Yeah, and it's good to see. I mean, they've been in existence a long time. They came back after Katrina. They really redid it. And I bring it up because, one, I knew you had worked there, but two, I don't talk about it often enough. People are looking to get a good lunch, and you want to get it's just outside of the Central Business District, the Warehouse District. It's over on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. There's a couple other things over there now, but it's a great spot to check out for lunch.
Absolutely.
So you have a lot of background in the food, restaurant, hospitality business, but you know, for the last many years, you've been known locally as Rudy the Foodie.
Yeah.
So how did that come about?
Oh, man, I think I was sitting with some buddies, some other restaurant guys, Tony Abity, maybe know him from the Hilton days. Mm-hmm. He, as of recent, was with the Jack Rose Group, Quiet Hospitality, mm-hmm. QED, Quiet.
Yeah, I think it's QED.
Yeah, the Brian Landry Group. But we were sitting in, I think, El Gato Negro.
Oh,
and we would have, yeah. you know, we got this little Lakeview coffee crew that we had coffee every morning on Harrison in Lakeview.
That's a good spot.
And so we were sitting there and I was just taking a picture of the food that we were eating. And he just so happened to say, "Who do you think you are, Rudy the Foodie or something?" And so, we always made jokes amongst each other, but you know, I left that day just thinking, wow, because I was late to Instagram. I was late to social media. I really never used it much. And I was like, wow, Rudy the Foodie, because I wanted to figure out what was my next contribution to the industry. I no longer wanted to work the 55-hour, 60-hour weeks, mm-hmm. you know, just running kitchens in front of house and back of house operations. But I wanted to figure out how else I can contribute. And what I noticed is that there was a void in, you know, helping get butts in seats, mm-hmm. right? There wasn't many people that looked like me that were telling stories, that was providing news about food and beverage. And so when I researched it, and just throughout the South, I noticed there was a void. There was a lack of just, like I say, black voices in food and beverage journalism,
yeah.
right? And so Rudy the Foodie became a person who restaurants and establishments bought in to talk about that next dish.
Yeah.
And whether or not we were creating content for those restaurants, we were advertising them, but the main thing was to get butts in seats. And so my tagline at that time was creating loyal appetites for brands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did really well at that.
Yeah, you did.
You know, and I'm very happy for the opportunity. But let me just say that also gave me a health scare.
Mm.
Because I was trying and eating so many complex foods, my hypertension just skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the best thing that could have happened for me was the pandemic. Because, you know, I wasn't being fair to my body.
Yeah, you and I would see each other at events all the time.
All the time, right? And I was doing that, you know, just every day. That was a full-time job, eating food every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see people taking pictures of food, but no, I was literally trying different dishes and talking about food every day. So I had to make a change.
Yeah.
I had to make a change. So the pandemic really paused.
Yeah.
And I got to thinking, okay, what am I gonna do next? Because I can't continue to treat my body this way. So
yeah, I don't think people, you know, people listening to us, I think have a tendency to say, wow, well, that's a good life. And it is
yeah,
fun, right?
Is
I mean,
fun.
You and I have gotten to eat amazing meals. I think that's how we met
yeah.
through a social influencer kind of event.
Yeah, but Harris Casino.
That's right. But they bring out the entire menu,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
so even if you're eating a little bit, it's a little bit of a lot
and,
of rich
and I was
foods.
Known. I was known to order the left side of the menu. So I was that guy. So, you know, my friend, you know, when they come out and they bring me somewhere, I remember when a Silver Whistle opened up at the Punch Train Hotel, I ordered the whole left side of the menu. So, you know, I was that guy. So
right.
I was really indulging in a lot of different
all the appetizers, all yep. the, yeah, so. Right. Yeah, so that's interesting that COVID really caused a jump.
Yep.
And that's going to be a good shift. And before we do that, I'm going to pay a couple more bills, if you don't mind. Then we're going to jump into what you're doing now. The most frequent questions I get, and you and I talk about this all the time, are about moving to New Orleans. People text me, email me, IM me all the time. And if you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor. That's where my sponsor, Liz Wood, comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. Not a lot of realtors want to do both, but she's willing to work with people they want to rent, maybe check out a neighborhood, something like that, see if New Orleans is right for them. Look, it's New Orleans is a terrific city, sitting here with somebody who loves the city as much as I do, but it's a city of neighborhoods and it can be hard to figure out where's the right fit for you. And Liz makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at LizWoodRealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. A bunch of members of our community have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. In fact, Sunday, I was doing a book signing. Someone walked in who was from New Jersey and had worked with Liz to find a place to buy here. And I hear those stories all the time. The other thing that sets Liz apart is what she does after she helps you find a home. She's really great at building community. I know that's something close to Rudy's heart, and getting people connected with other people. So not only does she help you find a place, but then get you into the community so you're not in a new place by yourself and don't know anyone. When you're ready to make New Orleans home, reach out to Liz. And while you're working with Liz, you're probably going to need to secure financing. That's where my buddy Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage comes in. Let him help you get everything in place. We did that with a refi we did a couple years ago, and then we were looking to move, and we went through the process again on buying a new home, and both times it was as smooth as could be. He makes everything, again, really easy. His staff is really just on top of things. Buying a home can be really stressful. Closing, getting financing, all that. It can be really stressful, and it's something most people don't do, but a couple times in their lives, maybe. And Tommy makes that process really smooth. So I'll put links to both Tommy and Liz in the show notes. But now I want to get back to our discussion, and I kind of want to, you hinted at it a moment ago. I want to talk about what you're doing now. So Flavor Down South. What is it, man?
Well, Flavor Down South, we are a, first and foremost, we are a media company. My goal with my, along with my team, is to create a platform where Black writers, specifically that are writing about food and beverage and hospitality, have a platform to land at.
Mm-hmm.
Too many times when we have to be at the mercy of publishers or editors in charge to get our stories out there,
right,
for the big publications.
Right, sure.
I thought about, wouldn't it be cool? Most people are doing it for free anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the Yelpers,
yeah, right.
You look at the people who write for, Eater, and they're, uh-huh. What did they give you? A gift card?
Right.
If you get your story out there, you're lucky, right? And so we wanted to be intentional about really creating a space in a movement throughout 10 states. So we're talking not only Louisiana. I know a lot of people just think New Orleans when we say, but Louisiana has a lot of great foods. Broussard, mm-hmm. Lafayette, Louisiana. There's a lot of great food throughout Louisiana, right? Texas, all the down south states, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky. So we're looking at 10 states that we want to impact with untold stories, stories about mom and pops that you may have not heard of, minority businesses, businesses that are struggling to get their word out,
mm-hmm.
right? We all know that it's, what it costs to get that one plate to the table is something that most diners wouldn't even believe.
Right, absolutely.
And so the idea of it is that if a restaurant doesn't have butts and seats, they can't strive and thrive. It's impossible. Right. If people are not coming back and becoming repeat customers, it doesn't matter if you enjoyed that one dish. And so the idea for Flavor Down South, while we are creating this platform, we were trying to figure out a way to introduce ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And what we thought about the lowest hanging fruit, because we had an opportunity to do some pilot shows to pitch to Netflix. Some bigger stories,
right?
Some what they call 22-minute, 30-minute pilot shows, right? Hurricane Ida hit, so that didn't work out,
right?
And so we were trying to figure out another way to kind of introduce ourselves. And what was the lowest hanging fruit was a podcast show, and so the Flavor Down South podcast was birthed. And the idea is to champion culinary and hospitality underdogs down south. And so, and let me just say this, an underdog doesn't necessarily mean that you're not doing well.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It just could be where somebody may not have discovered you.
Right.
Right. If I am, just think about it. Most people who live in the South drive through all of those states to get to the next state.
Right.
So, totally. So when you're going to Texas, you're driving through Lafayette.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice.
Right along I-10.
Yep. And so if you're coming from Alabama and you drive through Louisiana to get to Texas, you got to go through Lafayette. Why can't we start figuring out how to communicate what eateries you should try?
Sure. No, it makes great sense. And, you know, lots of people, spring break just ended here, right? Lots of people take their kids to Florida, right? You're driving through Mississippi, Alabama, the Panhandle.
Yes.
Lots of places not far off the highway. But
yeah.
But you wouldn't know if you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And so the idea of it is that, and no knock on the tourism industry.
Sure.
Their job is to sell the city. And a lot of times when we sell a city, we sell one segment of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And just as fitting as your show is, right? The name of it is
Beyond Bourbon Street.
So what else is there to offer beyond Bourbon Street, right?
Right.
And we have to, it's important. I think the last time I looked at it, about 90% of the restaurants in New Orleans alone are mom and pops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that means to me that they're the heartbeat of the city.
Right.
Why not intentionally, when your friends come in town or if you meet somebody, send them to one of the mom and pops. Send them beyond the beaten path, right?
Absolutely.
So that's the intention of Flavor Down South. We want to be, you know, we want to speak from a Black lens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to tell stories from a Black lens. And we want to create a space where young up-and-coming writers, young up-and-coming camera operators, photographers can have a place for their art, creativity, content to land. And we don't have to be at the mercy of the bigger publications to do that.
Yeah, I love it. When you first started kicking around this idea and talking to me about it, it made so much sense to me. I had recently spoken with Jalen Ziles over at, I think it's Ziles, excuse me, Jalen, if I messed that up. She runs a Facebook group called Where Black Nola Eats, and we did an episode with her. And one of the things, the thing that struck me the most in that episode is she was saying that the economic numbers show that for every $100 someone spends at a restaurant in New Orleans, it's either 40 cents or $4. It's 4 pennies, 40 cents, $4. Whatever it is, it's a tiny amount goes to Black-owned restaurants. And yet, when you're a local, you eat in Black-owned restaurants all the time, regardless of your color, because again, you're back to the mom and pop, right?
Yeah.
But they don't have the big budgets.
Right.
In fact, the place where she and I recorded is a tiny little place that can only be open a couple days a week, and their food is terrific, but they're in this rut of like, how can they keep going? You can't survive serving food 2-3 days a week, especially not really good, high-quality food, but they don't get the audience.
Yeah, and more importantly, I think what you're going to see now, I know the last 5 years, besides Rudy the Foodie, what I have been doing was consulting for restaurants.
Right.
I think we have to make sure that, you know, why it is important for butts to come and see, for people to come in and sit in seats and frequent the restaurants. It's even more important for the restaurants to be prepared to accept the guests.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And so one of the other missions that I do when I'm working and interviewing guests and talking about the restaurants, what are the services you need? What are the resources you need to be better?
Sure.
Right. Because a lot of times they only know what they know. And that's they know how to fix those dishes.
Right. But they might not know about food cost or all those things to get that plate to the table that you talked about.
And all those things to be profitable.
Right.
Right. So the first question I always ask, do you know what it costs to open up every day?
Right.
And white or black, a lot of them don't know.
No,
so it's not a color thing.
Right.
It's just an operating properly thing, right? And so I always like to encourage anybody who have any type of inventory or any type of cost of goods, you have to do inventory.
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no sense to think that you're going to be profitable if you're not taking inventory.
Well, you don't even know.
Yeah. And I'm talking to every restaurant owner that I know personally that I've met with, you have to do inventory, right? You have to, your cost of goods have to be counted. And so your labor cost has to be at a percentage that's, you know,
yeah,
sustainable.
It's sustainable, right?
So So Flavor Down South is more than just a podcast. So that's to answer your question.
Yeah. And, you know, what I loved about it, I loved that you landed on, and you and I have been friends now for years. And so I knew about the work trying to get the pilots done. And I knew about the road bumps with Hurricane Ida. And when you asked me about a podcast, and full disclosure, I helped Rudy did all the work, but I helped him get set up and try to guide him a little bit through the podcasting business since I've been doing that for a while. It made sense because you control it.
Yeah.
Right. And then the bigger brand, Flavor Down South, you control bringing in those Black writers and photographers and filmographers.
Absolutely.
And you can provide, like you said, rather than wait for somebody else, even a big company where the payday might be bigger.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You can start now and attract attention, not only for yourself and Flavor Down South, but for all those people that are part of that infrastructure, part
absolutely,
of that team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we've been blessed, man, with folks like yourself. You know, we have two great committed producers, Cy mm-hmm. Eugene and Varun Laurent. We went to high school together, by the way, and we were also in the same class the 4 years we were at St. Aug. But those guys, they believed in what I wanted to do.
Right.
And it's while it's my dream, it has become theirs as well.
Sure.
More importantly, I think that, you know, when we talk about getting Black writers, camera operators, photographers an opportunity, I want to be very clear that we're looking to pay people.
Right.
We're not, and let's not dance around it. You got a lot of festivals, you got a lot of events that are asking content writers to do things for free in exchange for tickets.
Yep.
Right? Stop doing that. I'm letting you know, don't do that. And the reason why is your content has value. Your content is king. And so treat your content like a king. Like it's valuable. And so don't just give it away. Now, you can share, you know, a load of highlights.
Right.
But if you continue and if we continue this cycle of doing everything in exchange for a free ticket or a free meal, it waters down the opportunity for real writers to make a living.
Yeah. And you and I both experienced that, right?
Yeah.
Plenty of free opportunities, quote unquote,
right.
but that's not a business. It's not sustainable.
It's
it doesn't
hobby.
Take care of your family.
It's a hobby.
Right.
Right. It becomes a hobby. And so Flavor Down South want to become that voice for and tell stories for us by us.
Yep. I love it. Yeah. I love the tagline. I love it. So let's talk about when did you actually launch?
So, oh man. What was the date? I don't even remember, Mark. The first episode was Vance Verkerson, and actually the first episode was Kenneth Spears.
Oh yeah,
and
guy,
we had an audio issue. So funny enough, man, we have really, you know, we're doing audio and it's an audio video format, right?
Right.
And so I am so aggressive when it comes to how I want this to go. And you and I have had many conversations where you've had to be my, you know, my come to Jesus and say, hey, man,
don't
slow
do
down.
It all at
right?
once.
Don't do it all at once. But I have this idea to make this so large because I feel that there are opportunities and stories are being missed.
Sure.
There are chances for us to tell these one-time stories or these unique stories. And this is the risk that I'm taking. It's either this or nothing. At this point, right?
Right, right.
So,
you're all in.
I'm not on any of the local television stations, but we do have all of these outlets and platforms that we can distribute to,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the idea of it is for us to get in front of it, to take this risk, and man, it's been hard. So I don't know exactly what date the first episode
but it was.
But
it was earlier in 2023.
It was February.
But
Vance Verkerson is actually downloaded now. If you go check out that episode, the episode is called Back in Stride Again. And we talked to Vance about, you know, just his two decades of waiting to reopen. All right. And that's the important thing, right? Two decades is a long time to wait to reopen a restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you listen to his story, there was a lot of days where he wanted to quit. There was a lot of things that happened in his family where they just wanted to say, you know what, we're going to go in a different direction. But the idea of interviewing Vance was just the you know, I know we use this word resilient a lot, but it was just the pivoting that they'd done and to give others hope that don't give up.
Right.
Right. And so he's one of the only Black sausage makers left. And so I thought it was fitting to lead off with him once we did the redo.
Yeah, I agree.
March 8th.
March 8th. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So you have spoiled where I was going to go at the end. So I'm going to do it right now. Longtime listeners will know that I interviewed Vance Vaucresson several years ago, and we talked a lot about Vance's passion for our culture and our food and the Seventh Ward where he grew up and the difference between Creole and Cajun and how much he cares about that. I don't want to give away all this story because of what I'm about to say. You're going to get a chance to find out. But in the show notes, I'm going to link to the episode I did with him. But one of the things that I have never done before in 8 years of Beyond Bourbon Street is that we're going to give you some bonus content this week. So you are going to get this episode, which is 180. And then right behind it in your feed, if you're subscribed, you're going to get a bonus episode. And the bonus you're going to get is Flavor Down South, nice. That initial episode with Vance Vaucresson.
Nice.
And I'm doing that for a bunch of reasons as a listener. I'm doing that because I want to give you something extra. I'm doing it because I care and believe so much in what you're doing, Rudy. I also love the story that you got out of Vance, and I grew up with Vance. I went to high school with him.
Sure.
Both his dad and my dad owned businesses, owned restaurants. The story that you got out of him is slightly different than the story I got out of him.
Yeah.
And I think that's due in large part, one, the timing. It's been years.
Sure.
But two, you got a white interviewer and you got a black interviewer.
Exactly.
And so what I would encourage everyone to do is listen to this bonus episode. I'm really excited to share it. And then I want you to subscribe to Flavor Down South. And we'll put all that information in the show notes, how you can do that, the links. But you're going to get a bonus episode of, it's going to be under the Beyond Bourbon Street label, but it is episode one of Flavor Down South. And I want you to listen to that and listen to my interview with Vance, and I'm proud of the one I did too, but you hear the differences. And it's just all about what I hear you saying is different perspectives and trying to give a voice to those different perspectives.
Yeah. Is that in a nutshell, man? We can be in the same place and have two different experiences.
And you and I have talked about that while we're having experiences.
Yeah. And so, and so the idea of it is that when we go in these restaurants, right? And I just want to say this. I know I'm in the weeds, but I want to say this. When you go into restaurants, right? And you may have a bad meal. Don't say the restaurant is bad.
Yeah, don't go on social media.
Stop doing that. You just ordered the wrong thing. You know, you just ordered something wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean the whole menu is bad.
Or if there's a problem, talk to the manager.
Yeah.
Tell them about it because they want a chance. And I say this, having grown up in the restaurant business, they want a chance to fix something if something does go wrong.
Absolutely. So all you Yelpers and all you people that's out there that's getting online, and it really, you have to give restaurant owners, operators, managers an opportunity to fix the issue. Please stop. It really hurts the restaurants when you do that. So I'm not chastising anyone, but I'm just simply saying that it's a tough business to run. It's
It gets back to that. You and I have talked about this so many times, and even today, that plate that gets presented in front of you, so much effort, so many people, so much money, so much going all the way back to where that food was raised.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into getting that
hands,
plate
lot of steps,
on
right.
the table.
So.
And that means there's a lot of opportunity to get it wrong.
Yep.
Not apologizing. Look, if you go someplace, you have a bad meal, you should speak up, you should say something.
Absolutely.
You go back, you have another bad meal. Maybe that's not the place, and maybe it's not going to survive. Maybe it shouldn't. But by and large, great restaurants, whether they're big or small or a big company or a small company, they're putting out good food, particularly in New Orleans, or you're not going to last.
Yeah.
And I think that's true around the South, too.
Yeah.
Right? Probably
and,
true everywhere.
And Mark, just to piggyback off of that, I'll be fair, right? Restaurants, tighten up your service. Tighten up your customer service, because when people come in, there's a lot of competition, and we have to be fair. We have to make sure people feel appreciated. We have to make sure it's not taking you an hour to get food to the table. So, you know, just as much we have to help one another be better, right? And so hold each other accountable. So just as much as you want great service, you have to, you know, and vice versa, be fair to the restaurants and vice versa. So, and I hate bad service, by the way. So,
well, and you see, again, I don't want to give it all away because I want people to listen to the Flavor Down South episode with Vance. But one of the Vance does many, many things really, really well.
Yeah.
But one of the things he does is he's out in his cafe checking on people.
Yeah, he does a lot of table touches.
Right.
He
does, you he doing all right?
He does sometimes
maybe
he do too many. Yeah.
Yes.
So but yeah, his ability to see people come in the door, whether he's having a conversation, making sausage, his head is always up. And I know we teach cooks to, you know, when they hit his down, they're working, but you have to be able to see the entire operation. And Vance is great at that. And he's a great ambassador. And I just want to say this to note why Flavor Down South is important. He and another guest that we interviewed just this week, this episode would be episode 3, Addis Nola, the Ethiopian restaurant on Bayou Road, which is the first street in New Orleans, right? It provided a lot of the trades and things like that on that street. But Addis Nola and Bo Vance are part of a Black restaurant accelerator program provided by the Urban League, the National Urban League, and Pepsi Foundation. And so those are the type of resources that we need to pour back into these community mom and pop restaurants, because training, you know, ability to get capital, insurance, all of these little things that they really need to be profitable and be sustainable. Right. And so although I don't have any affiliation with the Urban League of Pepsi, I thought it was very just a dope opportunity for them to give back to the community in that way, because a lot of times restaurants get left out.
Yeah. Right? Well, and you hit on it earlier. You know, Vance has grown up in the business. Vance knows business as well as food.
Yeah.
But you get that most mom and pop restaurants open because they think they make good food.
Yep.
And they do make good food.
Yeah.
But then they find out they're no longer cooking Sunday dinner.
Yeah.
They're running a business.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And they don't have maybe they didn't have the opportunity, or they didn't learn it anywhere. And so there's fundamental pieces. One, a lot of times they don't realize it or they're resistant. But even if you overcome that hurdle, they then need the resources.
Yeah.
So even once you make people realize, I need insurance, I need to think about benefits, I need to think about food safety, I need to think about training, they don't know where to go get that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where you really need an infrastructure to help support it.
You do. And so that type of ecosystem is one that, you know, Flavor Down South is going to continue to advocate for. We're going to bring on guests that can talk about those type of sustainability opportunities for the mom and pops who can't, you know, or may not know where to go. Right.
Right.
And so I even want to figure out a way to tie the Restaurant Association and the Hospitality Foundation back into some of the Black restaurants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's important that we bridge that gap. For so long throughout my years, there's been a disconnect.
Yeah.
I don't know if we call it disenfranchised or what, but we need those conversations to happen, because liability insurance, picking the right brick and mortar, all of those things are crucial to having a profitable restaurant. You can't just say, oh, I'm open here. You got to see what traffic is involved, like how many other restaurants that are serving the same thing. So all of these things, I don't think that people take into consideration when open a building. But we're hoping that Flavor Down South can provide at least the conversations on making good decisions when it comes to that. So
yeah. So what's been a fun thing about doing Flavor Down South?
Man, it's a learning curve. Like, it's something, you know, I think for years I've done everything on my phone. Right.
Right.
And so, you know, we invested in almost $10,000 worth of equipment. And we're very fortunate. Let me just say, Dave & Buster's out of Houston, Texas, is our presenting sponsor for this season. Our value proposition was just that. It was to help other mom and pops get butts in seats. And they took a chance on us. Uh-huh. So the idea of it is that we want to continue to have fun stories, important news stories. I know we're not always eating uh-huh. on the show, but the idea of it is to tell the real important things that can continue to connect people to these restaurants. But the guests, man, you know, Vance, Kenneth Spears, who's the first Black food and beverage director for the French Quarter Fest.
Yep, celebrated 40 years.
I mean, he has over 66 vendors at that fest, man, that he's responsible for, right? And the whole beverage component, the whole VIP component. And so he was a great, savvy business leader that we talked to. Prince LeBeau at Addis Nola, him and his family, and what they're doing with the Ethiopian cuisine.
Yeah, it's amazing. They just moved into a bigger space.
I mean, and the restaurant is fitting. I'm talking about the ambiance is nice. You're going to see it on episode 3. And this young, he's 25 years old. And when I'm telling you, he's a firecracker. He knows his business. And so those are the kind of young restaurateurs that we want to introduce you to, because they are the future.
Sure.
Right. And then we have the dinosaurs like Vance Verkason and
all of
the,
that.
Yeah. But all the information that he provides, which, like I said, man, Vance has been a great, great a son for this community. And so he's making his family proud. So.
Yeah. And the other thing, and you mentioned it earlier, and I want to come back to it, is your vision is not just New Orleans or Louisiana. It's 10 southern states.
It's a big chunk of geography. It is. And what we're looking to do with that, we're going to solve that problem by recruiting other people in those states.
But again, that's consistent with your mission of I want to find people. I want to get them involved. I want to pay them all those things.
Yeah, so that we want to reward you. Now, of course, you know, we're a smaller footprint, but the idea of it is for us to continue to get investors, sponsors, different revenue streams that we're trying to create. But the idea of it is that wouldn't it be cool, right, to have a publication where you can go and find out about a black restaurant or a minority restaurant that you've never heard about that comes from a black voice, right? And listen, I want to be very clear. We're not saying that we won't, you know, food is universal, right?
Sure.
But what we are saying is that The fact is that there are a lack of opportunity and resources for black restaurants.
Absolutely.
And so we wanna catch them up to speed. We wanna at least provide them with some opportunities. And so, like, even now we're gonna meet with New Orleans and Company on Friday, and we're gonna talk to the tourism industry about Flavor Down South.
Nice.
And we wanna get in front of their memberships and say, hey, you know, while we know these cluster restaurants, have you ever considered having an event here? Uh-huh. Or have you ever considered hiring this chef to come on your offsite event, right? And so connecting those dots so we all can strive and thrive. And so that's it.
I love it. And look, obviously, I'm a white guy running a podcast, but to me, it's awesome for me as well, because then it exposes maybe me to places that I'm not as familiar with, or at least gets it on your radar.
Yeah.
So when someone says, hey, where do you go eat? You don't just rattle off the same five or six places, right? And I think as you look about the 10 states, lots of commonalities. Certainly you get into big, big cities like Atlanta and Houston and Dallas, but even they have neighborhoods, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, all of these places have neighborhood restaurants.
Yeah, absolutely.
And why not highlight it? I would love to see, and I'm going to throw this at you because I just thought of it, is I would love to see, be able to go to Flavor Down South and kind of say, here's my itinerary. I'm going to Pensacola for the weekend, right? Where can I stop in Mississippi or Alabama when the kids get hungry? And rather than going to a chain, right? Let's go drive 2 miles off the highway and go eat at a mom and pop business and get a great plate of Southern food, right?
Yeah, and that's the idea. The idea of it is to close the gap in that space, right? Now, we do have some wonderful people doing some wonderful things. Let me not negate that. But if I may, I want to be clear about something else when it comes to us serving, you know, minority black businesses in this space, right? We will tell stories about white restaurants as well. Asian, we don't have a particular percentage that we're following, because we realize that black employees work at those establishments.
Sure.
And so we still have to frequent all of them.
Right.
Because they employ black people, right? But the idea of it is that they have, you know, more resources to continue to be sustainable, and they may have someone that they know that could help, and so we just want to make sure that that we close the gap on some of that a little bit. And so I want to make sure that we're not in no way unintentionally saying that we're only looking, we are mainly focused on that group, but at the same time we want to bring everyone to the table to figure out how we can spread some of these resources out. And we saw it during the PPP loan. We wasn't at the table. We didn't go to Congress. We didn't have anybody representing us from our community in Congress to talk about what black restaurants needed. And so that we're not part of the association like we need to be. We're just not.
Right.
And so we need to start having these tough conversations with other leaders, bringing them on a show, talking about how we can get a buying power.
Yep.
You know, just being able to order from Sysco at a where it's not a huge variance every time you got to buy inventory.
Right.
And so just things like that that we want to highlight. So
yeah, no, I actually think it's a really inclusive thing, because what I've heard you say over and over, you mentioned the restaurant association in passing. Part of the advantage of being in that restaurant association is all those other restaurant owners you get to know, right? Certainly you get access to benefits, which is very important and why a lot of restaurants join. But whether you're black or white, getting yourself in a room with other successful people who are maybe a couple steps ahead of you and can lift you up. Absolutely. Right? And in general, people that join those associations, they want to help lift other people up.
Sure.
They just don't know how to do it, or they don't have the time.
Yeah.
But you bring something together. And I see Flavor Down South doing that too, that you have the opportunity to bring people together so that they can share and learn.
That's
and
it.
Everybody grows,
That's
right?
It. That's
yeah,
it.
Totally.
And so the more the podcast is just an artery, or you know, just it's just a little bitty branch on a tree that we're hoping to grow in 10 states.
Well, man, I am so excited about what you're doing.
Man, I appreciate you, man.
It's the episode again. It's with Vance Fokerson. It's episode 1 of Flavor Down South. If you're listening today and you're subscribed to my podcast, you're going to get it as a bonus episode. So you'll see episode 180, and then you'll see bonus Flavor Down South. I want to put all this in the show notes, but let's tell people where they can find out about Flavor Down South.
Instagram, Flavor Down South, Facebook, Flavor Down South. We're not on Twitter. We're on Fanbase. I don't know if you heard of Fanbase.
No, I haven't heard
Fanbase
of that one
is
yet.
A new app that we're on, Flavor Down South. And we're on YouTube at Flavor Down South. And so if you have any questions or you want to get me directly, Rudy@flavordownsouth.com. You can email me, and we'll return your email, and let's connect. Do you have stories that you think that are important to tell? If you know about a mom and pop who, you know, may be struggling, and we can bring them on a show to give them some publicity and let folks know about what they're doing, just hit us up, and we will do our best to do that. So,
and I'll get those links from you. We'll put all of that in the show notes. Again, I'm so happy for you. I'm excited to see it finally kicked off.
I love
what's going
appreciate
on.
Appreciate you, Mark.
Thank you so much for your time, man.
Oh, man, I appreciate you. Congratulations on all your success, the book signing, and everything else that you've been doing. So,
thank you. You know, one of the things it does for me is it allows me to help give others voice.
Yeah.
And that's one of the really rewarding things. Again, we're going to put links to everything in the show notes, which will be over at beyondbourbonst.com/180. Thanks again to our sponsors, the Historic New Orleans Collection, Two Chicks Walking Tours, Liz Wood Realty, and Tommy Manzella over at Gulf Coast Mortgage. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my daughters to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.